still remembers fire. Grass remembers rain. Every scar tells a story carved out of pain. If you go digging, son, best mind what you find. The truth.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Gang, it's going to be a short one today. And, I apologize in advance, but your boy is just war-slapped the F out, if you want to be honest. I just got home after being gone, like literally pulled up in the driveway 15 minutes ago after a four-hour drive back from Rome, Texas, on a combined maybe 6 hours of sleep over this past weekend, past 4 days. And I'm a little cooked, as the kids say. I'm cooked. I don't think that's how they use it. Doesn't matter. I'm real happy to be home, though. It's funny. You know, when you're home, when you're in your own spot, there's all these little things that just irritate the piss out of you. You know, the gutter, I got a bend in my gutter, and I got a roof thing I got to fix, and, you know, I got work to do on the cars, and feels like there's always something to work on. You know, the plumbing, I got a plumbing issue I got to straighten out. I got an electrical issue I got to straighten. There's just always, I got leaves I need to clean up. It's never ending, you know? You know how it is. It's never ending. But boy, man, when you're going away from it on the road, it's just the best place in the world the minute you pull up in the driveway. I was so happy to pull down my leaf-covered driveway today and just happy to be back in my own place with my people, you know, with Rachel and the children. And I know it's only going to be even more this year, you know. And not disillusioned with the road, just a little weary. Just a little weary. But we wrapped up the Christmas tour, William Lee Martin's Christmas tour. Last night in Grapevine, Texas. And then me, Darren, William, went out to celebrate some of William's friends. And there was 14 people there at the little celebration afterwards at the Hotel Venn in Grapevine, Texas. Real fancy, fancy place. And the 14 people were all husband and wife couples. And of the 7 men that were there alongside me, I was the only one not wearing a cowboy hat or a pair of boots. I was in a sea of Fort Worth cowboys, and they're all right, I reckon. Not all of them, but some of it feels a little performative, you know, kind of country club cowboy type stuff. It made me kind of long for the days of like cowboys, like my father-in-law. You know, he was a steer wrestler. That man was a cowboy. His best friend, Tommy Dew, that man about a cowboy that anybody ever met in my life. It made me long for them, you know, back when they didn't wear $600 hats and $500 boots. Made me kind of long for those days. And the folks that grew up outside, you all got your own version of it somewhere, you know. If you grew up in Ireland, you probably got some version of that type of dude, and you probably also remember the older version, and it made me long for the older version a little bit. Guys were just tough as nails and eat barbed wire and spit nails if they needed to. I grew up in Texas. I was fortunate to grow around a great number of old hardened cowboys, just tougher than fence wire, you know what I mean? Them fellas that just tough, just full of grit, you know? Not I don't imagine you'd see them in a place like that. It was just a different breed. It just made me think about that, made me miss it a little bit. Christmas tour has been a grind. It's a grind every year. It's not, it ain't like doing a, boy, I'm tired. It ain't like doing stand-up, you know? I mean, I do stand-up on the show, but when I go out and do stand-up, all I have to worry about is ticket sales and my performance. That's it, you know? I got to worry about the job I do, and that's it. But when you do a show like this with an ensemble show, there's just so many moving parts. And any five things can go wrong and throw those parts awry. And it's a lot to keep track of. It's a lot of rehearsal, and the travel schedule is a grind. And we've just been going since the end of November, you know, and it feels like December has just flown by me, and I'm pretty torn on whether I'm going to do it next year or not, in all honesty. I do have a good time doing it. I do like being a part of something just fun and a little campy and Christmassy and just fun for the whole family. Just a little laid back, goofy, fun stuff, you know? It's usually kind of a pick me up at the end of the year, but this year was a little bit more of a grind. I'm just a little run down, and as a result, you know, I missed out on my oldest kid's Junie. I missed out on Junie's end of the year concert. I had to watch it on my phone from the dressing room, which it's a privilege to be able to do that in this day and age, because, you know, all technology and what have you. And boy, Junie just killed it, you know. Just knocked it out of the park, and everybody had wonderful things to say about it. And all right, none of our shows was bad, you know. They weren't bad. They were all, every one of them was a hit. Every one of them was a banger of a show. We didn't have a single bad show of the run. Some years we've done it, you know, there's a couple shows it takes a while to tune it up and get it working right. But this show, we had it tuned right after the first show, and the first show was still good. You know, but we had it so tuned after that first show that it was ready to rock and roll. But whoo, daddy's tired, y'all. We did, of course, Gladewater last week, and then it's Gladewater. I don't even know. My days are running together, to be honest with you. Now, last week we had Gladewater, and then we had a cancellation. We were supposed to be in Shreveport, and that show got canceled. We replaced it with a show in Shawnee, Oklahoma, not knowing that was the night of the Alabama OU game, which is a very storied franchise, Alabama and OU. And it's a storied rivalry, if you will. You know, it's a big deal. I struggle. We'll get in that a little bit, actually. So I left here Thursday morning, early Thursday morning, about 6 o'clock in the morning, and drove up to Rome, Texas to meet Bill and Darren. And then we immediately hopped in the truck and headed to El Reno, Oklahoma, which I promised myself the last time I was in El Reno, Oklahoma was going to be the last time I was in El Reno, Oklahoma. And then I saw the tour schedule and found out Bill had booked this show there. Realized I was going to be in El Reno one more time. And my feelings remain the same. El Reno, Oklahoma, I just, you know, I can't give away tickets in that town. I don't know what it is, but there ain't five people in that town that give two shits about seeing my show, and I'm not going back. I do my best to advertise and market for them every time, and it just never goes anywhere. I do great in Oklahoma City. I do great in Tulsa. I do great in other parts of Oklahoma. I don't do worth a flip in El Reno, Oklahoma. And it's not a fight I want to keep having. It's not a profitable fight. I lose my ass every time I go up there financially. We did have a good show. We had, you know, we had a good 60 people there. Had a banger of a show, you know, the people that came. But they didn't come see me. They came to see William. He has a good following there. And it was a killer show. And we got done with that. We went to some little rundown dive called the Tuxedo Bar. And I venture to say there's never been a tuxedo in that bar. And most expensive dive bar I've ever been in my life. Two rounds of drinks for three dudes, and $75-$80 to get out of there. And I thought, my Lord, did I have to pay extra for the cigarette smoke I've been choking on all night? Did I pay extra to sit next to a cold cinder block wall? I'm not sure. Did I pay extra for some of the worst karaoke I ever heard in my life? Probably. And that's a stop I will not be making. I will not be doing that to myself again. I got no interest in it. And we got up the next morning, and we didn't have a hotel room in Shawnee, so we just drove out to Shawnee. And one, I will tell you, here's my one singular gem in El Reno, Oklahoma, is there's this little rundown little restaurant, grill, whatever you want to call it, called Robert's Grill. And Robert's Grill, just this little old matchbook-sized place that you go off into, and it's mostly griddle and counter space. And you just sit around the counter, and you order whatever you want, he's going to make it. Don't matter. You just order whatever you want, he's going to make it. You want a chili cheese dog in the morning, he's going to make it, baby. You want an onion burger, he's going to make it. But he makes some of the best bacon and eggs. It's just perfect every time. Bacon, eggs, a little toast, good hash brown, greasy hash brown. Soak up some of that bad whiskey from the night before. And we went over there and got some good breakfast. So if you do happen to find yourself stuck in El Reno, Oklahoma, with no hope of escape, just know that there's Robert's Grill. And it's a singular gem within that town. We got up next morning, went over Robert's, ate, and caught up on a little work in the hotel lobby and some social media work before heading out to Shawnee. Shawnee was a trip. It's not a long trip, but Shawnee in and of itself was a trip. So normally the theater he plays there is called the Ritz. And a man named Lauren that runs the Ritz for the city. But the Ritz Theater was temporarily closed. They had some kind of, somebody came out there, it's in an old historic part of town, and somebody hired a fella that didn't know what he was doing to tear down part of a building, and he ended up knocking the whole facade off an old historic building, and that was all having to be fixed. 2 years ago, they had a fire. That place might be cursed. Like 2 years ago to the day of that facade falling off, they had a fire. And like most old theaters, it's reportedly haunted. The El Reno Theater is supposed to be haunted. I'll tell you, the last time I was in El Reno, it's got the dressing room is down in the basement. And it's a dungeon-y sort of place down there. And I was sitting down there in the basement while Barry Laminek was on stage messing around with my phone in front of this little old mirror. And I swear to everything that I felt somebody put a hand on my neck. And I about jumped out of my skin. I grabbed everything I had in that dressing room, took it upstairs, and I just sat behind stage the rest of the night. I didn't go back down that dressing room. Most of these old theaters got some stories. Most of these old theaters reportedly got some haints running around them, you know. The Ritz and Shawnee, no exception. Plenty of stories about that place. But because that theater, we couldn't use that theater, they took us out to a place called Sarkey's Performing Arts Center. And it's a part of an old Catholic school. really, really large Catholic school, maybe a university at one time. I think it was called Abbey University or something along those lines. And at some point, Abbey University closed down. And the story is so convoluted. They sold it to the owner of the Hobby Lobby, the guy that owns Hobby Lobby, the main dude. He bought this whole university and all its land. Everything except the museum. There's a museum on site. And he owned everything except the museum. And he gave that to Oklahoma Baptist University. And Oklahoma Baptist University come in there and stripped everything they could out of them buildings that was worth the flip and took it and put it in their building and then just left this place to sit. Or they brought a bunch of their old junk over and left it in there, kind of used it as storage, the old theater and everything. So it was just tons of antique junk theater lighting, non-digital stuff, not much call for anymore. And kind of looked like a theater graveyard in there a little bit. We got there, we had to sweep up and clean the theater ourselves. It was a mess. The floor was a mess, crap all over the floor. Bill kept saying, I feel like the Little Rascals. Let's put on a show. You know, we're out there sweeping the floor and cleaning stuff up. And anyways, the story now, so on that property, there's a bunch of Benedictine monks that still own parts of that property. And I guess at some point, the monks had some other land in Oklahoma they traded back for the rest of the college. So now they have control of it again. Now, mind you, the whole time they're telling me all this information about the monks, I'm not that familiar with Catholicism. And the whole time they're giving us this information about the monks, the all that's running through my mind is, I was thinking about Tibetan Buddhist monks, you know the guys I'm talking about, and the shaved head and all the guys that are like marching across America to protest right now. I was thinking of the Buddhist Tibetan monks, and I was like, how in the hell did they end up owning a Catholic school in Oklahoma? It wasn't until much later in the day that it dawned on me that Catholics also have monks. And these were Benedictine Catholic monks. Right next, right attached to the theater is a museum. And for whatever reason, is the Guerra Museum, the Guerra Museum of Art, something like that. For whatever reason, this museum has the only mummies in Oklahoma. The only mummies in Oklahoma. Boy, there's a... I wish I put my phone. I'm smelling a weird smell out here. Might be me. I've literally just got out of the car. So they got three mummies in there. They got shrunken heads. They even had a mummified cat. And in various displays, they also have one of the only portraits of a pope that is allowed outside of the Vatican. And this portrait was done by somebody who studied the Mona Lisa a great deal and learned how to paint it. And it's really, really old. I don't remember which pope it is. I could probably look it up and tell you all that. You can go look it up yourself. I don't suppose it really matters. But this painting of this pope in his chair, it follows you. Everywhere you go through the room, that dude's staring at you. It's very creepy, very creepy. Remind me of, is it Viggo from Ghostbusters 2? You know, that painting, just looking at everybody. That painting has its eyes on you everywhere you go in that room. It's a little much. It's a little much. I didn't like, gave me the heebie-jeebies. Wasn't a fan. I love a good museum. But sometimes when it comes to old things and bodies and stuff like that, I ain't got no truck with that. It's not my type of thing. My people don't put bodies on display. You know, I remember there was this big exhibit traveling around for a while. I think it was called Body Art, where they had taken human bodies that were donated to the project, you know, by the owners, by the human before they died, and made all these art exhibits of like the the vascular system and all that. This is why I couldn't, I mean, besides I wasn't smart enough, but I could have never been a doctor or work in a morgue or anything like that, because that stuff just creeps me smooth out. My wife wanted to go that, and I said, there ain't no way in hell I'm going that. I love you. I ain't going. And she went and checked it out and had a great time, but it just, nope. Hey, we all got our limits. That's mine. And it, so I go in this room with these mummies. One of them's a lady named Tutu, and she's all covered up. She's got the shroud mask and all that good stuff. But you can kind of tell under them rags and bindings that there's a little bitty old body under there, you know? And that, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. And then there's another one called Horace. He was named Horace after Horace. And he's still in his sarcophagus. You can't see nothing of Horace. It's just a little sarcophagus laying there inside a display. And then they had another one that didn't have a name, and it was apparently a person who didn't have much money. And they had that sarcophagus open so that you could see the mummified body inside. I'm sure there's people that want to see that, you know, but it just, you could see the teeth. And that was, whoop, nope. That's how you end up carrying the spirit home with you. I ain't doing it, you know. I looked at it just long enough to get real good and creeped out, and then spent the rest of my time walking through the rest of that museum. And they had some neat stuff there, some paintings and what have you, and but boy, seeing them teeth through them mummified rags, didn't do it for me. It was time to get the hell out of that place. And we went over and we toured the chapel. You know, them Catholic folks, they sure know how to build a church. Boy, they put some money in a church. Beautiful stained glass windows. Just glorious, glorious chapel. Just beautiful floors. Beautiful artwork everywhere. I grew up Pentecostal. We didn't have all that. We just had a, you know, little old building and a drummer. What a bunch of highfalutin artwork and such. You know, we just need a good sound system and a drummer and some carpeted altars, and that was pretty good for the Pentecostals. It's weird that we toured. It's a beautiful campus, you know. Oklahoma, a great deal of Oklahoma, is very beautiful. Went and did that show. Everything that should have went wrong, that could have went wrong before that show. We didn't get to actually rehearse until 5 minutes after the doors were supposed to open, because the sound guy just disappeared. In the middle of sound check, the sound guy decided to go get his girlfriend some food. And they're all volunteers, so I don't know what you can do. You can't really raise hell at a volunteer. It's all a non-profit. And the light guy disappeared. He went off to go get some food, too, somewhere in the middle of us trying to set up all the lights and get everything going in that place. And, of course, Bill, whose tour this is, wasn't happy with none of that. And there's a lot of stress right before the show, not getting to rehearse, not getting to really go over all our sound cues with the sound guy, who then showed up again, but mad and refused to do the job. So we had to get somebody who wasn't a sound guy to run all the cues. And that, of course, starts you off in a rocky place. And we managed to pull it together. We got together, Bill, we pulled it together before we went out there and put on a hell of a good show in Shawnee. I made a woman in the front left row laughed so hard, I honestly thought she might was gonna have a stroke. That woman was snorting and cackling so hard, I thought she was done for a minute there. She doubled over. Of course, the meet and greet had some friends come out I hadn't seen in a while. My old buddy, Philip Barnhard, the heartthrob, he's an old wrestler. He come out to see us. And we just had one of the Benedictine monks come and watch the show and come up to us afterwards and thanked us for the work we were doing, the joy we were spreading, and the message of Christmas, and gave us a little blessing. And that felt nice, you know. That was the night of the Alabama OU game, and OU got the snot beat out of them. And a lot of unhappy people in Oklahoma about that. And I made a little joke. I said, well, we got to get back to Texas before that flood of tears in Norman, Oklahoma washes out the road. Her boy, some Oklahomans got mad. You fat son of a, you know, coming out calling me names and stuff. And I was making a little joke. And it's probably because I have a hard time relating to that. I have a hard time relating to the sports thing. I do. Anything like that. I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not trying to take away from you if you are into it. It doesn't. I don't get it. I didn't grow up a sports guy, though. And I didn't go to college, and I didn't grow up with that rah-rah, our team kind of stuff. You know, I remember it from high school, but it was always like, oh, if we win, great. If we don't, whatever. That's where I struggle with it, is that, you know, people see something like, we won. Like, you didn't win shit. They won, you know, but you didn't win. Oh, we lost. You didn't lose a damn thing. It is not going to affect, unless you work for the organization, it's probably not going to affect your life tomorrow. I don't understand tying your mood to other people's accomplishments. I guess I've always just been too worried. Maybe I'm just too self-centered. That might be the problem. I'm just not a team guy, you know? I've always, my mood has always been directly tied to my own accomplishments and my own failures, but not others. I just don't get into that. I like automotive racing. I got a few favorite drivers out there. If they lose, they lose. If they win, they win, and I'm happy for them. But I take no ownership over that and place none of that into myself. I love following David Gravel's, one of my favorite outlaw sprint drivers. I love David Gravel. Love watch that man race. But if he don't win a championship, it ain't going to affect my day-to-day. If he does win the championship, it don't affect my day-to-day. So I don't, even with professional sports, that stuff just wilds me. I live in Houston, you know, and the Houston Astros had a couple good years there. And the only thing I really appreciate, I was happy for them that they won, but I didn't feel like I won nothing. The one thing I will say that I do appreciate about it is that when they do win, the morale in the city is high. Everybody's proud to be a Houstonian, and I like that feeling. I like to see people walk around with their head up high, even if I don't agree with the reason. You know, my wife explained to me that's the way it was when she was in college. You know, when Texas Tech was doing good, everybody on campus was in a good mood, happy, walking around, high-fiving. And likewise, when they were not doing well, everybody on campus was brung down a little bit. So maybe it's just because I didn't have that experience, you know? I don't fault anybody for doing that stuff. I have a hard time relating to it. I really do. I've really been trying to open my perspective on it and understand it. And I have a real difficult time getting my brain to connect with those dots. And I've met some people in my life that don't seem to have much in the way of hopes and dreams and ambitions for themselves. They just want a nice life. But they're not trying to grab no ring. They're not trying to get nowhere. They're just trying to have some peace and enjoy their life. I'm not saying all sports fans are like that, or people that are fan-minded mentality when it comes to that kind of stuff are like that. I'm just saying, with that type of person, I kind of understand, like, this is your thing. This is your thing you're locked into. And I get it a little bit. If you don't have specific goals you're trying to achieve for yourself, I can kind of understand that. I mean, I can't understand not having ambition and dreams, because I just been a little dreamer boy since I was a kid in the wrecking yard. I always wanted to be something. I didn't know what it was yet, but there was always something burning inside of me that wanted a little more out of life. So that's always puzzling to me. I struggle to understand why people get so upset or so worked up about that stuff. And I probably shouldn't have made the joke. The joke was mean-spirited, but... And I didn't really think it was at the time, but the more I've reflected on it, it probably was. And you know, I had to do better in the future. I ain't looking to anger people. I was just being silly. We got it. We made it. We drove from Shawnee straight back to Decatur, Texas. Got in about 1-2 in the morning. I finally got to sleep 3 or 4 in the morning. And then we got up at 8 o'clock, got ready, and hit the road over to Grapevine to get in the theater and start rehearsing at about 10:30 in the a.m. We had 2 shows in Grapevine. We had a 3 p.m. matinee show, and then those are always sketchy. You know, matinee shows are hit or miss. Stand-up don't always work in daylight. And then we had a 7 p.m. show. And I'm a little superstitious on 2 show days. I really am, especially when there's a matinee show. Because it almost always seems to me one of them shows is not going to go well. And the matinee show, we blew it out. We blew the doors off that place. Had some 370 people there. And literally just rock and roll blew the doors off that place. And folks that came out to see it looked like they had a good time. We did a little meet and greet afterwards, and everybody seemed to be enjoying themselves. And you just get an hour or two to kind of chill out backstage, but we're still working on, like, we, you know, we're still getting things right and tweaking things on the show, because you never stop working on the show. And so by the time the second show rolls around, you know, we've just been going all day. And I was just, in the back of my head, I was like, boy, if that matinee show was that good, this show's about to eat it. This show's going to be the worst show of the tour, you know, cynicism that sits around in my brain pan. And lo and behold, that 7 p.m. show was a banger too. We took that trajectory from that 3 p.m. show and then turned it into a, you know, you ever seen them Harriers when they land? Them Harrier jet, they cock that face, not the Harrier. What's that jet? They come in F-14 when it come in, and they tilt that nose up. I mean, that's what we did with the altitude on that thing. We just took it, pointed it straight up, and sent it through the roof. And it was a banger show. We had over 400 people in that show. All in all, we entertained about 800 people. And everybody seemed real happy and seemed like they enjoyed the hell out of it. And it's, you get done with something like that, you're spent. You know, like I said, we went out and had a few drinks and celebrated, but I was cooked. And the time we got back to Bill's house, it was nearly 2 in the morning. I wanted to talk to my wife a little bit. We talked on the phone about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I tossed and turned and tried to sleep. It's hard to sleep after all the energy of a show like that. It's hard to just turn that off and go to bed. It's why so many comics end up doing drugs and having addiction issues. It's hard to turn that energy off. It was too wired up to go to sleep, but too tired to write or do anything productive. Sorry about that. The time we got done with, anyways, I tossed and turned, didn't sleep worth a flip, and then got up at about 8 and put myself together and get my check from Bill and get on the road and head back to Houston. Whew. And now, but the good news is, I'm off. I am off until, at least from the road, not from podcasting, social media, any of that. You know, I got to keep all that up. But I'm taking a break from the road. It dawned on me that I had put 25,000 miles on the Maserati this year, mostly schlepping my ass by myself back and forth between gigs. And the old Maserati hit over 100,000 miles on the way home. And I need a minute to be still. I just gotta hit the pause button for about a month. And so I'm taking off. rest of Christmas, I'm gonna sit here and enjoy my time with my family, what little bit of the Christmas season I got left, and have a quiet New Year's here at the house. And just take a month, because right towards the middle of February, it gets busy again. I'm doing a big show in Nacogdoches at the Lamplit Theater in Nacogdoches, Texas, and then Rachel scored me a hell of a gig at the Vulcan Gas Company in Austin, Texas. It's a really nice place. I worked there last year with Sam Miller as his feature act, and Rachel and them been going back and forth. They gave me a headlining date on the weekend. So I'm going there in March. And lo and behold, Rachel's working the whole time I'm gone, because she has done cooked me up a tour of Ireland in July. We're going to do some shows in Ireland. Kieran, you hear that? Where are you at, Kieran? Mr. Kinsella, I'm coming your way. I don't know exactly where you're at. I can't remember right off the top of my head right now, but I think she told me they're trying to put a six show run together in Ireland right now, is what it's looking like. There's going to be at least a few, but I think they're trying to add some shows. And there's a possibility it might get to go over to Belgium and do some shows in Belgium. And that would be a treat too. My grandfather's twin brother was killed in World War II, and he's one of the American soldiers that was buried in a cemetery in Belgium. And nobody in my family has ever seen that gravesite. We're not exactly going to Belgium money kind of folks. My grandfather never even got to see his brother's grave. But I have the coordinates to exactly where it is. And a friend of mine there in Belgium has offered to take me out there to the cemetery and help me find my great uncle Carl's grave, which would just be fantastic. Would it be my great uncle? I don't know. It's my grandfather's brother. I don't know if that's great uncle or not. I can never remember how all that crap lines out. So that'd be something. Be the first Longmire to go over there and set eyes on it. I don't know what something it would be. I'm not a big graveyard person, but be something. But at least it won't be out in a clay pot with teeth sticking out of the rags, you know. My folks didn't do much of that. So I'm psyched about that, man. I'm psyched. I've never been to Ireland, and I'm just tickled pink that Rachel has put all that together. And we're trying to go a little crazy this year. We're trying to, one of my bucket lists is to perform at the Fringe Festival in Scotland. And honestly, the craziest part about it is I can buy a plane ticket to Ireland cheaper than I can buy a plane ticket to Louisville, Kentucky, which is just wild to me. I can get tickets to go to Ireland for $600 or so. But I'm gonna spend $800 trying to get to Louisville. Good Lord, don't try to fly to Colorado Springs. You spend $1,000 if you spend a dime. So I'm really psyched about that. That's been working on the new special, and was working part of the new special was within my Christmas set I was doing. And it felt good to work some of that out. You can't work on a lot during the Christmas show. The Christmas show, most of the comedy needs to be Christmas themed, kind of lighthearted. We got to keep it pretty clean, you know, because all ages show, and not all ages, but pretty close to. And so those shows, it's hard for me to work on new stuff or hard for me to work on the special. But I've been doing a lot of writing. So the special is, I want to call it the tipping point, because I feel like that's kind of where I'm at in life. I feel like I've reached a place where not only is my career at a tipping point, But I feel like I'm at a tipping point in my life, like where I know who I can count on two hands, the number of friends I got. And honestly, I can count on one hand the ones I keep up with. I feel like I know who I am at this point in my life. A lot of it's been because of this podcast. I feel like I know what I'll tolerate, what I won't out of another human being. I feel like I understand my place in the world. And so I've been trying to write around those ideas and really drill it down in my head so I can get to the material that I'm looking for. But my Lord, I am a cooked goose right now. I can tell because every time I try to think of something, my brain takes about 15 extra minutes getting there. And it wasn't a bad drive back from Rome. I was just 4 hours behind, 4 hours behind the wheels, 4 hours behind the wheel, especially when you're running on low sleep and maybe a marginal hangover. I did drink some fine bourbon last night. Had a little Buffalo Trace. I'm not the biggest Buffalo Trace fan, but it's good stuff. But the best thing in 4 days is to pull down my driveway and get out of my car and kiss that pretty lady I'm married to and go in there. And I walked in the door and my oldest just run and jumped on me. And my youngest allowed me to hug him, which you don't always do. And a lot of neurodivergent people don't like to be touched, and you kind of have to wait for their signal for when it's okay. But he gave me a big old hug, and that always feels good for him because you know you had to earn it. And I look forward to imagine while I'm sitting out here chatting with y'all while the podcast is going, I'll be sitting on the porch smoking some fine green and I think I'm gonna try to power through. I was thinking I was gonna take a nap, but honestly, so it's nearly 3 o'clock now. I'm recording this thing. If I get it rendered and uploaded in time for 5:30, it'll be a freaking miracle. Anyways, I really appreciate you guys tuning in every week. I'm sorry during this tour and stuff. I know some of these episodes haven't been top notch, but I'm looking forward to having some weeks off so I can focus a little harder on what we're doing here. And also, I took the last donation of all the hot... I got no more Hot Wheels left in the garage. I've taken all the die-cast cars and I've donated them. I took the last bunch of them over to Poncho Claus. Poncho Claus is a bit of a hero here in Houston. He's been... His mission for the last 40 years has been making sure children that go without get toys at Christmas and stuff. And Poncho helps the kids that really just got it the worst. You know, the kids that kind of get forgotten by all the agencies and the big charities. Poncho is a boots on the ground community worker. And he's made it throughout his own. He's had heart attacks and health struggles. And the man don't make no money. You know, he's a charitable man, does a lot of counseling in the jailhouse and all that kind of stuff. And he's just a fantastic human being that truly cares about his mission. And in another world, they'd have called him father. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a real good human being. And I was just so honored to be able to be a messenger of y'all's kindness and y'all's grace and sending all these toys and take them to him knowing they're going to a good place. And then Poncho invited me to come Christmas Eve and help him hand out toys to the children. And as tired as I am, I'm going to make sure I'm there to do that. I'm looking forward to that opportunity. I'm going to put on my Santa hat and I'm going to go over there and help Poncho, be Poncho Claus's helper and try to bring just a little more joy to the world right before Christmas. And that's all thanks to y'all's grace and kindness. And I'm I'm damned appreciative of it, more than I'm probably properly expressing right now because I'm a little wore out, but I just want you to really know I'm damned appreciative. Let's. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this thing up here. Let's do some testimonials. These are comments from last week's show. Let's see what we got. There we go. At Jay Chappie Dad. I saw your show in Grapevine last night. I was hoping to see more of your immense talent on display. While your material was pretty good, the other stuff you were asked to perform was simply awful. You're much better than that. I've seen it on your videos and podcasts. Best of luck on your upcoming European tour. I hope that you get a chance to do some of the more insightful, funny, and inspirational material. Merry Christmas and God bless. Well, Bubba, you know, you can please some of the people some of the time and hell, none of the people the rest of the time. I don't know how the saying goes. Sorry that you didn't have a good experience, but the Christmas show is not the place to be provocative and it just isn't. It's a fun for everybody type thing and may not be for you, but we sure had a good time doing it. And the man that wrote that show has been entertaining people for nearly 50 years and making a good living doing it. So I suspect he's got a good eye on what works for him, and it was his show. And I have certainly enjoyed being a part of it for the last 3 years, but not the best place to go if you're looking for just me. You know, I can't be just me and part of an ensemble like that. I have to be a team player and be a part of everything that's going on. But I had a good time doing it, you know. But it ain't for everybody. It ain't everybody's cup of tea. I get that. So I'm sorry you didn't have a good experience. Hope you come see me the next time I'm in town when it's just my show. Maybe you'll have a better one. And also, I can't do my hard-hitting material. It's just a different type of situation. That's not the show to go watch if you just want to see a good stand-up show, like a thought-provoking, interesting stand-up show. That's just, you're not going to see that. Not when we're having to entertain blue hairs to babies. And though I don't necessarily always like everything that we perform, part of being a team player sometimes is supporting the team. So I apologize that you did not have the experience you were looking for. I hope you have a Merry Christmas too. At Jake of All Trades, Master of Fun, or old buddy Jake. My back has been out this whole week. So bad the wife has had to put my socks on. Coupled that with this morning's temperature at -4, and let me tell you, this hour drive to work has been hell, even in my wife's Tahoe. But aside from that, everyone is healthy, and I won $2,000 on slots. So I'd say I still got a lot to be grateful for. Boy, I could stand to win $2,000 on a slot machine right now, except I wouldn't play it to begin with because I hate to gamble. But I'm proud for you, Bubba. That's a win right there. A little extra $2,000 in your pocket right before Christmas time. And I sure hope your back starts giving you some relief and time to enjoy the rest of the Christmas season. Let's see, at Q-Ball 1971. Loved the Nutcracker show in Gladewater. Was row F, seat 4, and it definitely was cozy there, but the show was great. See what I mean? You can please some people, you know. Old Q-Ball had a good time at the show. I'm glad you did. That Gladewater show was fire start to finish. We had a good time on that stinking show, I tell you that. And hell of a good time hanging out with old Jackson after the show, for sure. Good to be back home for a little bit. Even if it was real brief. I don't know. The other 700-something people in Grapevine had a great time. But can't please everyone all the time. Everybody's got a different view on what art should and should not be, and what entertainment should and should not be. Let's close this thing out with a little piece I've been working on. I worked on till late in the night, and it's just I don't know if you've ever had a year where it feels like whatever it is you believe in, but for me it's God. But if you ever have a year where it feels like God took a crowbar to your life and just started prying up the floorboards, you know, see what was going on underneath. And that's been me lately. Feels like every part of my life is sitting right on the edge of something. Not falling apart, just kind of teetering. My career's changing. Friendships are changing. Some of them got louder. Some of them went silent. Some of that's my fault. Somewhere in there, I finally learned there's peace in knowing which ones you ain't got to chase anymore. I used to think peace meant calm. Now I think it just means clarity. Knowing what you'll put up with, what you won't. Knowing who you are, who you ain't gonna be anymore. Knowing how to say no without writing a damn essay about it. I know who my people are now. And a lot of that's because of this podcast. I know the shape of my voice. I know what matters to me. It ain't applause or likes or even friendships that disappear the second you stop being useful. You know, you get to a certain age and you start running out of room for bullshit. I don't have space in my life anymore for folks who make me shrink just to stay in the room. People want me to be less than. I want truth. I want laughter. I want people who let me take my boots off without feeling like I'm on trial. And the wild part, All that clarity, all that peace, it showed up right when things started working. Right when I finally got the shot I prayed for. But that's also when the real fear crept in. Not what if I fail, it's more what if I succeed? What if I get everything I thought I wanted? I mean, really, what if I get everything I think I want and I still feel like that scared little kid from the wrecking yard, watching the world behind a pile of scrap metal and half-finished dreams and hopes? And that's where I'm at. This is the season of my life right now. This exact moment. It's a tipping point. And I don't mean a fall. I mean the moment where you stop holding back. I failed enough to know it won't kill you. I've been broke. I've been scared. I buried people. I buried parts of myself. But I'm finally at a point where I ain't scared of losing. I'm scared of actually being seen a little bit. Because if you really see me and I still ain't enough, then I ain't got nothing left to hide behind. But I'm leaning into it anyway. I'm stepping into it. Not because I'm ready, but because I finally want it more than I'm afraid of it. This is where I'm at. This is my tipping point. If I go over, that's cool. But let it be loud. Let it be honest as hell. And let it be mine. And if you're on the edge of something too right now, I'm rooting for you. Sometimes you got to want something bad enough to chase the fear away, and I think you probably do. So lean hard. Just go. Worst thing that can happen is you tump over, you got to right yourself again. I'm rooting for you. I'm JW, and I love you. Ooh, I'm wiped. Ooh, I don't know how long that water has been sitting out in this garage, but I suspect a minute. Ah. I don't know how water could taste old, but that water do taste old. I really do love you guys. Thank y'all. Sorry it's a short one. We'll be back at it next week.